everyone, and welcome to another episode of K-Drama Convos. So this is our extremely long-awaited Scarlet Heart review.
Right.
Moon Lover Scarlet Heart Ryo, which I have no idea why it's so long. So, first off, starting off right away, if you've never seen this show, don't listen to this.
Exactly. Go watch it.
Yeah, go watch it. We are going to give huge spoilers. We're talking about everyone in this show just right off the bat. So this show is originally based off of a Chinese novel, I believe, which in the novel does the same thing at the beginning where she travels back in time and it's set in a historical setting.
Right.
So I don't know what the story of the Chinese one is. I have, like, the differences between them and stuff.
Well, it's similar and it has an emperor and all his sons.
Well, sure, it has that, but yeah. I don't know, like, because there was a season one and two of the Chinese one, of the drama, because there's a drama version of that. And, yeah, but I've never seen that one. Right. I think it's even a little bit older than Scarlet Heart. So we watched Scarlet Heart. Both of us have seen it once before. So this was our second, second time we'd seen it. We'd seen it, let's say, 2019, probably. So it was years, four years since we'd seen it. So because we've seen other shows. For example, recently we'd done an episode on Habak. And how we remembered that show very differently than what it actually...
We had this nostalgic idea of the show, I think.
Yes, and then we rewatched it.
And then
it.
We actually... We watched it with our critical glasses on.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, shoot. Okay, isn't that what I remember?
Yeah.
And so one small part of me was a little worried we'd be like that with Scarlet Heart. But then the rest of me was pretty sure we'd still like it. And we did.
Yeah.
So if people who have seen, Korean historicals or Seogwooks, and you don't really like that, complicated storylines with multiple relationships, the struggle for the throne, you wouldn't like this show.
Right, because that's what it is.
Exactly what it is. But I think there are multiple things in this show that do make it slightly different, or they put their own twist on stuff that is used in historical shows quite frequently. Like, for example, I would say a lot of the historical shows we've seen have some sort of, tragic event happen, be it in the past or during the show.
Right.
This show takes that and runs with it. But they, I think they still add a twist to stuff you've seen in other shows. You know, like, for us, for example... We have a tricky time when historicals bring in, political stuff. Depending on the political stuff, it's very hard to explain, but there are some times that it is just too confusing.
Especially when it brings in the nobles and their positions and... How whether
the power
they
struggle.
Support the king or not.
Which can be interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Yeah,
but it can get it's complex.
It is, yeah.
So telling a story about it without going too deeply into it is it's hard to do.
Yeah, and it can be hard to follow sometimes when that's not the main focus on the story and they're more giving you snippets.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I think that this Scarlet Heart gives a different perspective to that power struggle in a way. And that scene that you always see in Korean historicals with the king on his throne and all the princes and nobles standing in the palace. I don't know what it's the throne room, I don't know what it's called. It's something that you will always see, and a lot of times those are the scenes that you kind of have, the nobles are saying this, but you know that they're not actually meaning that. You gotta read between the lines. Which is what it was like in society,
right?
I assume, something along those lines. But I think Scarlet Heart does a good job of not doing too much of that and we have enough context to understand it, which is one of the reasons I think this stands out as a historical, one of our favorite historicals. Right.
It doesn't lean too heavily into the role of the emperor
in a political
sense. It's more about his sons,
yes,
than his sons struggling to become the next ruler,
right,
than him actually ruling.
Which sounds very stereotypical,
right?
But I mean, you know, we'll jump into that right now briefly. I'll mention it, but this show actually goes between four rulers. That is something I don't think I personally have ever seen a show that did that.
Mm-hmm.
That you saw, you know, a lot of time it's either the power struggle between the princes, and either one becomes king or they're going to, or something along those lines, right. And that's where the story
ends. You usually
see
only one death of a king.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This one we see three deaths of each a different king, and we see the fourth one still ruling at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is very unique in this sense, and it just was very interesting because you really did not know what was going to happen to these characters, even if you were quote-unquote rooting for one of the princes to become king or something. They genuinely showed, like, it's messy. It's not messy. So messy.
Yeah, yeah. And it was nice that they weren't afraid to kill off characters.
Yes.
You know, often you'll see a drama where, you know, the hero, nothing goes, you know, the hero always wins in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody dies except for them.
The bad guys.
The bad guys and the background characters.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice to see them not be afraid to do that.
Yeah, it did not do that. So one thing that's very interesting, I'm going a bit more general here before we jump in, is this show has a lot of different tones, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, you have a lot of the time will have, you know, your show generally will fit into one category. It's sad, it's happy, it's romantic. Like, this show, like, takes all of them and, like, really, really, like, puts them all together and, like, mixes them all up.
Yeah.
Especially throughout the show. Because, you know, the most recent part of the show that we watched was the end of it, obviously, was, you know, and that's more the section that I remembered well. The first, I'll be honest, like 10 episodes, I did not remember as well as the second half, at least some of the details that happened in them. And it's like seeing, like, the third prince, who's evil in the end, seeing him hanging out with his brothers, kind of fooling around, you know, he's still a little
watching
cheeky.
The beginning, knowing the end is
like,
very different.
It's, yeah, and it was actually really sad because you're watching them have this pretty good relationship between each other on pretty good terms and stuff like that, and knowing where that ends up is like, whoa, like, this is so, so different. It's pretty crazy, like, to see that progression throughout the show. And I would say, generally, the show gets more serious as it goes on. Not completely, but I think it does. And a bit more sad as well. And one thing that I think you do have to take with a grain of salt is that this is based around real people and history, but it is not, like, fact.
No.
It's a historical fiction, you know, which is perfectly fine.
They just happen to take rulers that were their actual people.
Yes.
And then made up stories.
Oh, for sure. I'm saying
about
that
how things might have happened.
Right. And that's kind of the fun of it in a way. But I could see someone who, if they're really, really into history, and this is the first ruler of Goryeo. It's a pretty important era.
Yeah.
And, or the first king in the story is. And, you know, with the whole fourth prince being exiled in the blah, blah, that's not true. That's not a thing. He was a son, and he was the fourth in line. So he didn't really expect to be king because you're the fourth. But no, he wasn't that character, this dramatic past. You know, that just wasn't true.
Mm-hmm.
But with the other kings and how they died was either the same or very similar. And that, I think, was really interesting how they took a concept that was based off of a Chinese book,
right,
and took certain aspects of it and fit it into a Korean, mm-hmm, like, historical fiction. It was very interesting,
right,
especially looking up stuff about the actual rulers,
yeah,
and
yeah,
stuff.
That was very, it was interesting. Really interesting. You can't get angry that it's not historically accurate.
It's not trying, it's not to, trying be. To be. No. Uh-huh. No, not at all. But if you're looking for one that is obvious, I mean, I don't think anyone thought this one was.
No.
But
no.
I know there are some shows that are a little bit more historically accurate, especially if they're focusing on, like, one specific ruler or
right,
something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things we wanted to note with this show, so we mentioned that it was a slightly less political than, mm-hmm, some, like, I don't know if political is necessarily the right word, but that's, I can't think what else you'd say, than some shows. This is heavily relationship and character driven,
yes,
I would say. And a lot of that has to do with the, like, there's like a bajillion individual relationships, mm-hmm, be it romantic or not. And we wanted to, we're not going to go into insane detail here. We're going to be,
right,
kind of brief. But we just wanted to talk about how those different, how different some of those relationships, mm-hmm, really were.
And they
were,
show different aspects of, I just lost my dream.
Of love? Of
no.
power? Of,
just how relationships can be different.
Mm.
And,
mm-hmm,
how one, a certain aspect of the relationship comes to the forefront.
Mm, sure.
Depending on the relationship.
Yeah. So we will try and keep it brief,
yeah,
you know, before we get into some other stuff that we noted throughout this show. So the first one we have is the Eighth Prince and Heisu. So, mm-hmm, this was something that I remember, this was one thing, looking back on the show, like, before we had rewatched it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd only seen it once, you know, 3-4 years ago. I look back, I'm like, that was so weird that, so the Eighth Prince was married at the time.
Yeah.
Obviously, in the beginning of the show. And that he falls in love with Heisu, and they have this whole story, romantic storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And looking back on it, I thought, oh, that's so odd. Like, that's, like, weird. Why would you do that? You know,
mm-hmm,
you do the take it with a grain of salt that this is historical. Having multiple wives
was
wasn't
not
weird.
Unusual. Yeah.
And then the biggest thing I think I realized, which is the most obvious thing ever, is that it was basically an arranged marriage. Like,
right. Yeah.
You know, Eighth's wife loved him, but he didn't necessarily love her when they got married.
Right.
You
right.
know.
And he treated her well.
Oh,
and
for
and
sure.
That.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so Eighth and Heisu, their love, especially starting off, was just a young, innocent love.
Right. It might have been his first
yeah.
love.
It might have been his first true love,
mm-hmm,
for sure. And, you know, seeing them at the beginning of the show, they're about in the first half, and watching them, it's, I think, more of your stereotypical romance, if
mm-hmm.
you want to put it that way. They're, you know, they're still having to keep it a secret.
Their and cute this, little gestures.
They're kind of, yeah, the
yeah.
nice little moments,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. And it really is very sweet.
It is sweet.
And stuff like that.
Kind of.
Well, for the most part.
Yeah.
Well, what's kind of?
It's... Because I didn't live back then.
Oh,
having a
sure.
sweet romance while you're married,
yeah,
makes me a little uncomfortable.
Oh,
but
sure. I'm saying that
for the time period, it was
yes,
acceptable.
I think watching it back the second time, I looked at it slightly
yes.
differently.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it, knowing that this is such a different time in history,
yeah.
and also that it. It really was an arranged marriage between him and his wife. He didn't want to get, you know, he didn't
mm-hmm.
want it. Is, you know, but yes, just, you know, them having this young, very young love, I would say. And then, unfortunately, watching it change Eighth into
mm-hmm.
such a different person was really crazy.
Yeah.
And something that I really did forget how different he was in the end.
Mm-hmm.
To,
and he used... Mm-hmm. He used his love for Heisu to justify
yeah,
a lot of the
mm-hmm.
bad choices that he made.
Yeah, in some ways he used it as almost of an excuse.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it was true that his love for her was some of his motivation of striving for power.
Yeah.
But it unfortunately just turned into something so, like, not bad or not convoluted, but it that might have been his initial reasoning of, mm-hmm. like, why he was wanting power, but it just changed so much. Mm-hmm. And he was a very interesting character to follow throughout that, mm-hmm. for sure. And then there's Aeth and his wife. This was, like, really sad.
Yeah.
And this was one of the first tragic storyline we ever saw on this show, mm-hmm. which was what episode did she pass? I don't remember. Like,
she
six?
She dies in episode 5.
5, okay. Yeah, so, and this is one thing we kind of said, how she really loved him unconditionally.
Mm-hmm.
She had pushed for their marriage. He didn't really, you know, he took it in stride still, but it was watching her knowing she was sick and gonna die.
Right.
And watching her see her husband fall in love with someone else and saying,
mm-hmm.
yes, I want him to be happy.
Right.
Even after I'm gone.
Yeah.
And pushing them together and supporting their relationship was sad to watch. I mean, she had such a composure. I was like, I don't know how she did it.
She was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. It was crazy. And that was, I'm going to mention this now because there's no way we're not going to mention this later. In episode, would you say 5, was the first time they ever used a very specific song. I should pull up what song this is later. I'll pull it up at the end. Which we very nicely nicknamed the Death Song.
Right. Beautiful.
It's
beautiful,
such a good
haunting
song.
Tune.
I wouldn't say it's totally haunting, but
just the
it's so good. It's so good. And the lyrics are also very interesting if you look them up. And it is just so pretty. And they use it for almost every death in mm-hmm. this show. Not all.
Right.
But the impact of this song never leaves.
Right.
Even after you hear it multiple mm-hmm. times, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
It really is. So then we have the 10th Prince and the Warrior. So these two are literally younger than the 8th. Like, the 8th.
They're probably...
They might have been
16.
They might have been
maybe?
Older teens. Yeah, who knows? Mm-hmm. Yeah, hard to say. Mm-hmm. And this is something that, again, it's a very innocent. This one's more like a playful, I would say.
Yeah.
And what you said about the Warrior, about how she loved the 10th unconditionally.
Unconditionally, absolutely. Mm-hmm. No matter how he treated her or mm-hmm. spoke to her, she loved him. And she persisted.
Mm-hmm.
She's like,
mm-hmm.
okay, you know, you want me to sleep on the floor, I'll sleep on the floor. Or, you know, you don't want to eat with me, then don't eat with me, but I'm going to love mm-hmm. you anyway.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. she never gave up.
Yeah, and I think it was partly...
And in the end, she was willing to die for him.
Yeah, uh-huh. And I think it was partly him watching her actions mm-hmm. towards him. And also, I think, just maturing in general with some of the situations that were happening around them, that... he eventually did grow to love her. And it was just, you know, unfortunately, that being somewhat too late. a realization.
Mm-hmm.
But watching that it happened in the end was very nice to see.
Right.
You know, with that one, they didn't spend quite as much screen time with
mm-hmm.
them. Yeah. And then you have the 13th Prince and the Baekje Princess. So the 13th Prince is the musician or mm-hmm. artist, because you always forget for some reason. Or Namju Hyuk, if you want to.
Thank you. The artist.
Yes.
Musician.
So this actually might have been one of my least favorite romantic storylines.
Yeah, mine too.
I think this one, we just didn't get that much screen time. We didn't mm-hmm. really... I really liked 13th's character mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And also watching 13th grow throughout the show, between him and 4th mm-hmm. especially. But I never liked the princess very much. She was fine. She had her motivations, obviously very committed, stuff
there for
like
a
that.
Purpose
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Right. But one thing that was interesting was that she lied to him literally till the very end.
Yeah.
That
about who she actually
that who
was.
She was, that she was the princess. He right. he did not know that she was royalty technically. Yeah. And even though she lied about that, he didn't know. He still knew she was from Baekje. Mm-hmm. He loved her anyway, regardless of who she was. If she was just this commoner, like, refugee, right. he didn't care.
He even loved her after preventing mm-hmm. her assassination attempt.
Of the king, of his the own king. Father.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is, you know, because I think he saw where she was coming from with right. her hate. And, mm-hmm. you know, thankfully she kind of, I mean, multiple things happened at that, but realized that I don't think that was really going to solve anyone's problems, right, exactly. you know, like that. But yeah, theirs was okay. I think, again, it just didn't have that much time.
Right. They didn't really, their relationship didn't get developed all that
and
much.
The biggest development, I think, like, of their relationship was during a year jump mm-hmm. in that. So we didn't see a lot of
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But their, yeah, again, their ending is unfortunately extremely tragic.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and, you know, even if, for example, the 10th prince and the warrior, I don't think they, you know, their relationship was fine. It was cute. It was fun. But their, every death scene they do in this show, even if you didn't love this character or anything, it, the impact mm-hmm. is extremely impressive.
Because they show the impact it has on the people around them.
Yeah, extremely yeah. well. And I think that's one thing that they did amazingly with all
and
of them.
And it's interesting because they show that regardless of who's dying, it's not just, it's not something you brush under the rug.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. know, it's, every death is a hard thing.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think they do a very good job of portraying that yeah. throughout this show. Then you have the King and Lady O. So the, I guess like the head court lady or whatever
mm-hmm.
of, what's it, Damiwon? Is that what they call yeah. it? This is interesting because this is kind of started off because we hear a little bit about Lady O's backstory. Started off as kind of like an innocent, like, fleeting love that they had that turned into...
Back when he was a prince.
Yeah, I believe he was a prince yeah. at the time. And obviously there, you could say a quote-unquote, oh shoot, what's the word? Like a love that you're not supposed to be together.
Forbidden love.
Forbidden love. Yeah, theirs is a forbidden love, you mm-hmm. could say, in some ways. And, you know, it turned into something that at first I think the king, when he was a prince, had promised to stay with her. But then because he became king and stuff like that, he couldn't.
Right.
But she, you know, still loved him to the point of working her way up the ranks to, you know, work next to him personally.
Right.
And literally sacrificed her life for him
mm-hmm.
in more than one way, you could say. Because, you know, she could have just lived potentially outside the palace, gotten married, had a family,
right.
something like
moved
that.
Moved on with
moved
her life.
Moved on, but
yeah.
she didn't. She sacrificed years of her life mm-hmm. to work in the palace
to be
for
close
him.
To him.
Yeah. And this is one that is interesting because obviously they're much older, so they're much more mature. So mm-hmm. it's a very different impact than like the 10th and the warrior. And even though they had very little, like, actual screen time with these two together was very little,
mm-hmm.
but they were sometimes mentioned like by the queens or something like that. It's still, even though we didn't get to see much of it, the impact I think was really still there of how much he didn't trust many people in the palace.
Right.
And Lady O was one of the people he had his full mm-hmm. trust in.
Right.
And then when that was taken away, how much it hurt him that he couldn't do anything to prevent that from happening. And right. that whole thing was
yeah.
Very interesting mm-hmm. To see this, like, you know, quote-unquote forbidden love.
Right.
In the palace.
The most intimate scene between the two of them was when she was doing his hair.
That was one of the most, probably.
Yeah.
Well, a few scenes, we can see them really together.
Right.
And then you have the 14th and Heisu. Well, sorry. I guess there's not that theirs isn't the only forbidden love, quote unquote. Technically, the love between most of them and Heisu isn't exactly... It's not forbidden, but it's not exactly... what word? Approved?
Approved, yeah.
Does that make any sense? Yeah. So the 14th and Heisu, this is... This was interesting because...
This is a one-sided love.
This is extremely, extremely one-sided love. Yeah. And
he knows it.
Oh, fully absolutely aware. And I think that was one of the really interesting things is that I think eventually towards the end, he never thought he was going to get her love by the end of it. And he knew that and still was willing to... help her even though he knew she didn't love him.
He waited and waited.
This was
years. Total it up to like more than 5 years?
Yeah, so throughout the whole show, this include, there was 5 years worth of time jumps and then also a few months at the very end after Heisu had moved out of the palace. So there was, this show, it extends a very long period of time. Not necessarily following actual history, but it is a very long time. And he fell in love with her way at the beginning, the same time of when, I think Forth actually did in a way when she was singing and held on to that love for her.
Yeah.
And was... You know, I think it got to a point where he hated watching her get hurt in the palace.
Yep.
And he also, I think, was tired of being in the palace as well.
But he planned the way to get her out of the palace when the
first king,
original king,
was still alive.
And was willing, like, he was... success on the battlefield, so he was going to be...
Was the first?
Give him something.
I think it was the first king.
Yes, it was the first.
Yeah.
And so he had that promise from him.
For probably years.
Years,
Which is really crazy.
He had such foresight.
In a way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. And just, unfortunately, so many of these just be like, and the end of it is sad and tragic, and one of them dies in the end.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, with... all of these relationships, all of them, either one of them dies or both of them dies at some point.
Yeah, that's true.
Is something that this show is pretty crazy to see, like how much they really just keep killing off characters. So you have the 9th, and I don't know how to say her name right. I'm sorry if I butcher this. Chaeryeong. I don't know how to say it.
Yeah.
Who was the servant who was Heisu's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
So this one you see only snippets of, and it's really sad because the 9th prince 100% manipulated her.
He knew how she felt about him.
He had to have
and
known.
And used that to manipulate her behavior.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, they did show in some flashback that they did actually genuinely spend some time together. Mm-hmm. Like, you know... The only reason she knows how to read and write is because he taught her. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he necessarily ever grew to love her. He might have grown fond of her. Unfortunately, we don't know.
He just found her useful, I
think. Yes, and it was hard to tell, even at the very end, what he felt for her, you know?
Right.
And then this also connects to Heisu and Chaeryeong and how, you know... Because of her being manipulated by the 9th, she had lied so much to Heisu. And how much that really, really hit Heisu was just, like, crazy to see.
But Heisu made the choice to forgive her for it.
Mm-hmm.
To understand what palace life is like and how you can be manipulated by your feelings and... She chose not to hate her for what she did.
Yeah, because I think at first she just couldn't believe it, but then she really just started connecting the dots.
Yep.
And Forth is basically like, just forget about her. Why do you care? She's like, I think even though, you know, she lied to Jesus so much, their friendship was still true.
Right.
It really was. Mm-hmm. You know, it meant so much to Jesus.
Yeah.
And then some that aren't romantic relationships that were very important throughout was, like, the king and queen and their individual and both of them together relationship with the fourth.
Mm.
You really wanted to.
That really gets me as a parent. You need to give unconditional love to your children.
Mm-hmm.
You can discipline them. You can show them where they go wrong and correct them.
Mm-hmm.
But you're to love them unconditionally. Mm-hmm. And these parents didn't. And the fourth felt like he had to prove himself in order to gain their acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And I
mm-hmm.
just think that was just an awful place to put a child in.
Oh, for sure. I think it was interesting with the king. I think you really saw that the reason, like, Forth was exiled and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Was he exiled?
He was like a...
He technically wasn't. It was like a political thing.
He was like a political...
He was to calm political relations. And I think with the king, he never really hated the fourth.
He didn't.
And I think it showed that he, like, visited him and did care for him, but was pushed to make this decision to have to let go of one of his sons to just appease some of their relations. Like, not, like, you know, like, a little thing. Like, this was a big relation that they had. I think it's something to do with the border or something, mm-hmm. which is very important. Versus the queen, I think, took some of her anger and hate she had towards the king, towards the palace, towards so many things, and really, and projected it.
Oh, yeah. He became the scapegoat for everything mm-hmm. in her life that went wrong.
Yeah, everything, she blamed it on him,
yep.
which was so unfair when the poor kid didn't really do anything,
right.
you know? And, yeah, it just seeing how much to his face mm-hmm. she'd say, I hate you.
Yeah.
You're not my son. Get away from me. Why would I ever love you? Like, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And just seeing how much that hurt and that, you know, affected Forth's character so much of why he's like, you know, why he is who he is.
Right.
Is that, you know, struggle he had trying to deal with, especially him and the queen, him and his mom was the biggest one, I think. And then another one that's kind of more like a parent / mentor is Jesus and Lady O.
Mm-hmm.
So this was one that when I was, before we rewatched it, I thought they had a lot more scenes together. Yeah. They actually have very few, which is very interesting. And Lady O is very hard on Jesus after Jesus becomes a court lady at first. And Jesus doesn't get it. She's like, what am I doing wrong?
Right.
Why is this always me and this and that? And later, Lady O tells her, I see myself mm-hmm. in you.
Yep.
That you are going to be hurt or punished for basically being nice mm-hmm. and caring.
Yep.
And some of the lines that Lady O says to Jesus really cut hard once you see what happens to Jesus.
Yeah.
Is she literally tells Jesus, do not become what I became,
right.
which was someone who... She couldn't have her love, not openly.
Right.
She couldn't, and, you know.
And your love gets used against you, or used against the one you love.
Yeah, and stuff like that. And unfortunately, even though Lady O really tried, that is exactly what mm-hmm. happened to Jesus.
Like,
which is extremely depressing, honestly. Mm-hmm. And unfortunate that it's somewhat just to do with the palace power struggle is what they got stuck in the middle of, mm-hmm. basically. And then we have the biggest relationship that we actually do want to talk a little bit more about mm-hmm. is Jesus and the fourth.
Right.
So one thing I mentioned earlier about them having storyline, separate romantic storyline between Eighth and Jesus, how that was unique.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I honestly, at least off the top of my head, can't think of a show that they have had a full-on storyline with one of the leads with a different love interest that fully developed and wasn't just a fleeting crush, because that has happened.
Yeah, I just thought of one.
What?
The one about the little people inside.
Oh! You're right. You're right.
Yumi Sells.
Yumi Sells.
Yumi Sells. She actually has two different relationships.
Yumi Sells, I think, is the only other show that I have seen that in. Right. And they were both fully developed in a complete storyline.
Right.
Yeah, Yumi Sells. Yes, you're right.
It's the only one.
There you go. Thank you. That's all I think of. Mm-hmm. There are other shows where it was a crush at the beginning or something like that. But yeah, it's one very unique thing this show does.
Yeah.
And was interesting, I think, to watch as someone who, you know, maybe when you first watched this, you saw all the screenshots of Heisu and Forth.
And then you're like, what is happening?
You're like, what? Why is 8th here?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Just very, very
interesting.
And you're
like, oh, well, I know they're never going to last.
Right. So Heisu and Forth, their relationship is so complicated.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it's not your stereotypical, what you would find romantic, I guess you could say.
Right.
That you were noting earlier, that Forth, he expresses his love for her in very different ways.
Very different from the 8th.
Very different from the 8th, yes, thank you. And most of them were in action.
Exactly.
And most of them were like this big decision he had to make or wanted to make, even if he didn't, you know, wasn't able to try and protect her or protect their love or in some ways escape from the palace and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, something that I think he struggled with. Like, he couldn't just be like, oh, we're happy together. It's not true. It's
right.
So
he
much
knows
more
the reality of palace life.
Right, for sure. And with Heisu, I think understandably it takes her a little bit to warm up to him.
Mm-hmm.
When they first met each other, they hated each other. He especially didn't want any part, like didn't want to be any part with her at all.
Right, because she was a nobody.
Mm-hmm. No, she was a nobody. She annoyed him and messed up some of the stuff he was doing and stuff like that. And, you know, gradually, I think watching theirs relationship develop was one of the most interesting.
Uh-huh. It was really a, you don't know a person until you get to know the person kind
of
thing.
So true. Because when they first tried to get to know each other, she was still genuinely in love with the 8th prince.
Right.
So she wasn't looking for romance in any way. She wasn't trying to be romantic.
She was just being a genuine person.
Yeah. And really, they developed this kind of odd friendship at first, because they would, you know, have a few private moments together, which in the palace is very hard to come by.
Right.
And, you know, they had a lot of time meet in the garden, and they met in, like, their spot, where she brought him up his lunch the one day. And it's like, and for them, it really was snippets that you were seeing. And it was such a different way that they developed compared to what you might have guessed, you know, at the beginning. And they really did, like, open up to each other about some of the things they were afraid of. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he commented multiple things and she did as well. And a lot of them, they were surprised what the other one said.
Yeah. Or like when she would witness the belittlement that the mother gave to him, she never judged him for it and didn't criticize him for his scar. And that blew his mind.
It did. That was
he
a
had
huge
never had
one.
Had treatment, let alone love, like that before.
Yeah, And I would say throughout the relationship, he probably had the biggest change in a way. But she did as well. Like, she really did. And it was just very much a gradual thing, because they didn't, quote-unquote, get together till, oh gosh, what was it, 12 to 14? No, probably 14 or 16, probably somewhere in there, I would guess.
I 15 is when she says yes, I do want to marry him. That's when she tells...
They were... Okay, well...
That's when she tells the princess that.
Oh, yeah. But it was before that they, like, actually kiss. I can't remember. Whatever. But, yeah, but it was interesting, though, that their relationship developed before it was necessarily romantic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think made their love so much more mature than Heisu and the Eighth's love.
Sure. Because... Mm-hmm. Yeah, with theirs was just a more initial attraction and stuff. And then with Heisun Fourth, one of the very big things that complicated their relationship was her visions into the potential future of who he was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it almost like haunted her.
Yeah, unfortunately it made her make some not so great decisions.
Yeah, And she was so afraid that she just created someone who was evil and horrible and didn't know how to stop it, you know. And that was something that, it unfortunately had one especially, but the big one was the 10th and his wife dying. A big reason was because, you know, she was hesitant to trust that info with the Fourth because of what she knew he was supposed to become, but then she did trust him in the end, but it was too late. And you know, and they had this very much push and pull between the two of them, because at one point Heisu told the Fourth to get away from her because it just reminded her of all these memories,
right, of all these deaths of love, people she loved,
and then episodes later Fourth tells says to Heisu to get away from him because all she reminds him of is how he had to kill his 10th, you know, the 10th brother. And, you know, there's so much that happens between them. And a lot of it, you know, is for him is he always, like, wanted acceptance, wanted love, as well as I think in some ways wanted power. If he couldn't have love, then he wanted power, you know, in some ways. But, like,
I think he wanted power in order to keep the love.
Well, I think at the very beginning, like, way the beginning of the show, before he loved her, he just wanted to survive.
Yes.
And one of those ways might have been power, or one of those ways might have been laying low. He was kind of in between. But, like, at one point, he basically tells her, I don't want the throne.
Yeah.
If me and you can basically run away and be happy, I don't care.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think, you know, you really struck you because, you know, because you're watching this power struggle between all the princes. And he says,
I don't care.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't think the throne's all that. Basically, if I can't have you there, I don't want the throne.
Right. But
basically.
Then when he realizes... Getting the throne is the only way I can have you. Oh, well, then now I need the throne.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's a motivation that he's the only one who has that.
Right.
Yeah. And because, you know, these two, Heisu and Fourth, basically shouldn't have ever met, literally. And they shouldn't have fallen in love. And, like, how difficult their love is, like, between them. When... they make a declaration of love to either to each other or to, especially actually a different character. Like when Heisu tells the time she's a princess, but she's going to become the queen.
Right.
Maybe she's a queen already. Basically, no, I want to marry him.
Right.
And
right.
stuff like that. And at one point, the astronomer tells her to give up. And she was like, if I give up, I'll be done for.
After all the stuff that I've gone through.
No, it's not just that.
Waited so long.
No, what she literally says is all that has kept her going
is
knowing that they will hopefully
someday
be happy together. And, you know, and this is something that I think you especially get in a historical, because you have the situations and the environment for a love that is so intense.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's intense in their love, but also intense of in a way that, like, the fourth, especially at the very, towards the very end, when he finds out, like, multiple things that she's going to leave him, that he is such an intense reaction because their love was so intense.
Right.
And also because he already has lost so much, not, you know, people he trusts and, you know, his relationship with his mom.
Right.
And stuff like
that. He doesn't have anybody.
By the very end of the show.
By the end, everybody has left. The astronomer.
Mm-hmm. The 13th, who he was very close with, the 14th at the very end.
And Sue's gone, mm-hmm. and he's mm-hmm. left on the throne with no one.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that's a really interesting thing to watch, was his, you know, struggle, and the struggle of palace life, and how much just, it broke people. It really did. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, this is actually kind of funny, that I never realized was when they're partially the queen, the one who married the fourth, is trying to get rid of Heisu. That's part of the movie. And basically gets the eighth to tell the fourth that he used to be together with
And they were going to get married.
I didn't realize the fourth didn't know that. I had no idea that he hadn't caught on that the two had liked each other and, like, at least had something, you know?
I think he had an inkling that they liked each other. But only had an inkling that Eighth liked her.
No. He knew that.
He didn't know that there was this...
Yes!
Had been a declaration between
the two. Well, of course you didn't know the declaration, but I think he knew that Eighth liked Heisu. I never realized that... He didn't know that Heisu and Eighth were, like, kind of together for a while. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge, huge deal with
him. Well, that was when he said, get out of my sight.
That's what broke.
Yeah.
Basically, it was, one, you are leaving me to marry my brother, the 14th, and you probably loved the 8th all along anyway. You never loved me.
Right.
You know, and I think so much of that has to do with his life. Up to this point.
Oh, absolutely.
Of why.
Yeah. He's been so used to being looked over or put down or betrayed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. For sure. And it's interesting when this was some of the stuff I was a little foggy when I was, before we'd rewatch it, like looking back of how exactly some of this happened. But Heisu specifically says to Forth, he's the king at this point, that I want to leave before I hate you. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting line there. And she basically said that, you know, she, unfortunately, in the end, couldn't marry him because she had put a scar on her body to not marry their father, the king of time. And you know, even though they had gotten so close to the happiness they wanted, she mentioned how all she ever did was wait for him, and I've definitely heard that in some other historical shows, and how she basically said, like, she was afraid that if she stayed in the palace, it would change her, and change her love for him, and stuff like that, and so she left.
Right.
But
then she regretted, well, I don't know that she regretted it.
I don't know if she regretted leaving.
But she realized.
I don't know if she regretted leaving the palace part.
No, I don't think so.
But she did
regret leaving him.
Leaving him. And I think she regrets saying that to him. That she basically wrote in her letter that I was wrong when I said I would grow to hate you. Yeah. I don't think that was true. And, you know, she said multiple things. It was a really, really interesting bit of what she had in those letters. And watching Lee Joon-gi, the actor who plays the fourth, his reaction to her death and also afterwards and throughout this show, one of the things I think overall that makes it so, one of the things that we like so much was the acting. Mm-hmm. And especially of Lee Joon-gi and IU.
Yeah.
They're amazing. They're so good. And, you know, and just some of the best, honestly, some of the best, like, acting, not that I've ever seen, but, like, it is a highlight of this show. Right.
When you have a character that needs to be that intense.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
It takes
so much. Yeah.
And because sometimes what will happen is that you'll find a character like Forth, and someone will play him very cold. And
Which at times he was.
But he played the cold, but he also played vulnerable he was as well. He played both aspects of him very well.
Yeah, and one thing I think we sometimes noted with other characters in shows, which is not necessarily the acting, it's sometimes the writing or a combo, is some characters seem very one-sided. And the Forth character was so multifaceted. Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, he, you know, had his moments of, you know, honestly just innocent and playful with IU and kind of teasing her. And then some were his loyalty to someone and what he was doing, willing to do. And then also his love and how much he genuinely still cared for his family. And then also his hate towards people and that intensity of that. He did so well.
Yeah, if you were going to use a word to describe him, it would be intense.
For sure.
In all areas.
Yes, and also, when he was very, very vulnerable. And one of the scenes I want to note with him being vulnerable is when the very first time Heisu covers up his scar is such a good scene and is this huge turning point in his character and the progression of the show. And this might sound really weird, but because her covering up his scar and that, like, because it's quite an intimate scene between the two of them, I don't think necessarily has too much, like, as much impact on their relationship as it does just on the general story. But it's almost like a pause, and then you see where that, you know, really, like, snowballed and ended up.
Yeah.
Like, I hear a lot of people mention the train scene from, Hayao Miyazaki,
Spirited Away.
So in that scene in Spirited Away, literally nothing really happens.
Right, they're just sitting on the
train. Yes, and a lot of it I've heard people analyze it, not know if this was the original intention, but analyze it as a way for Chihiro is kind of processing what she went through and is building her strength. And, you know, but it's this pause.
Right.
And, you know, then seeing where this, you know, her just sitting there and then seeing what she did afterwards, that is not the same scene at all, but seeing where this one moment and then what came out of it afterwards was kind of crazy. Like, you know, the ripple effect from her covering his scar. Because one of the things that, now getting a bit more general, is because the third prince, when he was king and was dying, he basically yelling at Heisu, this is your fault.
Right.
You started all of this.
By covering his scar.
Which
I'm just looking back, and that was in episode 8.
Okay, not even halfway.
Covered his scar.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I thought was fascinating, looking back on this show after we, you know, finished it, of how they were able to connect Heisu, and intertwine her with all of these people. Because Heisu is a completely fictional character in no ways in history. But that they kind of dropped her in, and she somehow, you know, she fell in love with the 10th and, sorry, the 8th and the 4th. And then also the 14th fell in love with her. The 10th
fell in love with her.
No, he did. Oh, he briefly he fell in love with her, crush. But especially found a true friend in her. The crown prince
trusted her because she helped
his allergies, eczema kind of thing. And also the king in some ways, not necessarily just mostly because trusted her because of her being connected with Lady O, but kind of was intrigued by her and how she was kind of Lady O, and then also the princess from Baekje, they'd become friends. And the,
all due to her personality,
yeah, mm-hmm.
and how she treats others.
Yes, you know, and seeing just the sheer amount of people she became connected with.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really interesting how they did it, but in unfortunately for her character, especially I think it was after she watched Third die in front of her
mm-hmm.
and basically kind of blame her for it.
Yeah.
She, I think, took a step back and looked at the people she was connected to and realized so many of them
everyone
died.
Everyone that's died is connected to me.
Right. Which yeah. in no way is her fault.
No, no.
No, but I think it was so interesting how they really managed that. And I think a decently believable
mm-hmm.
way. You know, even the third prince who hated her for helping the fourth, you know, still became intertwined with her and used her
yeah.
and, you know, in so many different ways. So some of the, here we go, I'm going to pull the word that you like, themes we noted in this show. This, I think, is something that we mainly noted because we'd seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
We generally knew what the plot was. I'll be honest, I forgot a lot more about the plot than I think I did,
mm-hmm.
but we generally knew where the plot was going. We knew these characters,
right.
stuff like that. Do you want to start off with one? If you wouldn't mind.
Well, a lot of it revolves around power.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the big ones was the desire for power was motivated
mm-hmm.
by three different
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm.
By love, which can be seen in the fourth and the eighth, wanting
mm-hmm.
power.
Mm-hmm.
Revenge.
Which I would say would be in the third, especially.
In the thirds, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And by greed,
mm-hmm.
which was more the third.
The third, and I think also the eighth, his turned into that
his,
as well.
Yes, it mm-hmm. did.
Yeah. And it was just, sorry, you're going. And it was just, it was kind of fascinating with all of these characters, I think, how much their emotion, like, just changed over time. Like, even watching the third prince, which I think his, at first, was kind of, like, greed. Because, you know, his mother had basically worked him up to tell him he deserves it, and wanted him to rule. And then also turned into revenge
mm-hmm.
against the fourth, who he thinks
right.
stole his spotlight.
Right. What's interesting is that Fourth always struggles with acceptance of his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And Third found acceptance because he was going to go after the throne and
mm-hmm.
become the king.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, I don't remember what happened, he made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think I can tell you what scene you're talking about.
So, oh, no, it's when she's like, quick, you gotta make your brother the next thing.
She's
like, well, mother, don't you accept me? Do you
mm-hmm.
only accept me because I'm the king?
Mm-hmm.
And it really showed how, even though he was the most powerful person
mm-hmm.
in the land, without that acceptance from his mother, he was still small. If that makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah. And then with, like, the eighth, we talked about a little bit, his, you know, at first, his desire for power was because he wanted to protect Heisu and his love.
Right.
And then his family got involved
them.
In it. And I think at some point, it just did turn into greed a
mm-hmm.
little bit, and that desire for power. And
yeah.
And somewhat, I think, revenge a little bit on the fourth, somewhat.
For taking Heisu.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of these characters, it is so multifaceted. Like, so there's multiple reasons they wanted power.
Right, right.
You know? And then, like, for the fourth, he wanted the power because he wanted to protect Heisu. He wanted to stop Oh, shoot. Why didn't I highlight it in my notes? He basically mentions why he wants to become king to Heisu. Is that he wants, like, to stop there being, like, unfairness
right.
and
he
stuff like that.
He wants to help the people.
Yeah, that were.
He has a good motivation behind it. Not just personal gain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, you know, she... He hasn't just... Yeah, he just doesn't... He hasn't just wanted to protect her love. He also almost wants to get rid of unfairness, right. I think was the word that they used. And, and his... I don't think his was necessarily revenge against his, like, mother or anything like that. But I think that did still have some motivation of, like, his struggle with... he didn't necessarily want revenge, but he wanted acceptance, mm-hmm. I think, would be a better way to put that. And one thing that I think these two go hand in hand is the impossible situations and decisions is one thing that they had multiple throughout the show.
Right.
Like, for example, at one point, the eighth prince is basically told by his sister, either pick your family or pick Heisu.
Right.
And later on, and that's episode 11, by the way, this is right around when Heisu and Eighth, like, their relationship ends. This is a very iconic scene when Heisu's kneeling in front of the palace pleading for Lady O.
Right.
And he walks towards her. She sees him. And he turns and then walks away. And this one, where he does that, and then the fourth prince comes over and puts, like, his cloak over her to block her from the rain, is one of those instances where I think Heisu kind of notes how Fourth treats her.
Right.
And then another big one we noted, which I think was 11 or 12, somewhere in there, is when the eighth hadn't seen Heisu for almost a year, I believe, after she was exiled from the palace. And he comes up to her and she asks him, I think it was like three times, did you miss me?
Right.
And this and that. And he kind of avoids answering.
Never answers the question.
And then later, when the fourth comes back and sees her, immediately tells her, I missed you, and that's one of the, decisions that they had to make. And versus, like, there was the king and Lady O, where Lady O basically told him, I'm going to take the blame and I'm going to die taking the blame. Mm-hmm. And he... couldn't necessarily stop her.
Right.
Because if she confessed to it, then he tried to stop her, that'd look, you know, like he was abusing his power or look suspicious or something like that. And he had to just let her do that. And, you know.
I imagine there were a lot more things that we didn't see.
Oh, yeah.
Where he had to make decisions where... there's basically no good decision.
Yeah.
There's going to be bad consequences and good consequences no matter
what
you choose.
And it was like Fourth when he had to marry his, I believe it was his half-sister, and she became queen, and he couldn't marry Heisu, partly because of her scar, and also because of, like, there's other reasons too. Like, I think people, like, in the palace didn't like how much he, like, the favoritism towards her. And, you know, that was a decision that obviously he did not want to make.
Yeah.
But if he didn't, he would potentially lose the throne.
Well, you can't maintain the throne unless you don't have the support.
Yeah, which is where your power comes from, basically.
He got the support through the marriage.
Yeah. Then where these decisions and situations are very connected to the... how delicate the power of the king really was to be, you could say, to be a good ruler.
Right.
You know, versus, like, the king, the third, who he abused his power to, like, get rid of all the people he was suspicious of, stuff like that. Versus, I think, the original king, so their father, had used his power to... attempt to help the people, but still protect him. He used he protected his power through marriage and not necessarily, like, through other stuff. And, you know, and a lot to do with when the fourth was basically told, you can't marry Heisu because she has a scar. That's the rule. Mm-hmm. He couldn't just be like, huh, whatever, I'm the king, I'll overrule it.
Right.
It's not that simple.
Yeah.
Technically, he could have, but that could have, like, it's almost...
He could have lost all support completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or at least in something like that, where a lot of it is almost like public image and public relations, mm-hmm. almost, of the king.
Right.
Is kind of very... Is it, like, very on, like, thin ice?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very delicate situation. Yeah. And,
it almost always often seems like the king, who's supposed to be the most powerful man in the land,
mm-hmm.
really doesn't have much power at all.
No, sometimes, yeah. And, you know, he doesn't have much power, which means, which can mean different things. Like, he's either being, could be manipulated very easily, or it's really the nobles for a long time that had the power, because, like, if they had a private army and stuff like that.
And the king had to play this game.
Yeah.
To gain the support of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's kind of this, and that's with probably every monarch and stuff like that.
Oh,
it's so complicated, you know?
So power does not equal happiness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, a big thing, honestly, that this show, like, demonstrates, unfortunately, in a very tragic way.
And love does not necessarily equal happiness all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
In some ways, yeah. That... Sometimes their love, unfortunately, resulted in tragedy.
In pain.
And pain, yeah. That's very true. And one thing I want to go back to is the acting in this show. Because not just Lee Jun-gi and IU, but there's also other... this cast is insane, by the way. You have Baek-hyun, Nam Joo-hyuk, Ji-soo, Lee Jun-gi. You have all of them. You have you have IU. Like, I mean... And one thing I think was amazing to see was IU in this show, and also Baek-hyun, who are both K-pop stars, and that's what they're known for. And seeing their portrayal was just amazing, you know. And I've only seen IU in one other show, which was Hotel de Luna, which, yes, she did a good job. I personally just think her acting in Scarlet Heart is just so, so good. And... we haven't seen Lee Jun-gi in anything else, have we? Not that we finished, I don't... No, we started, oh, that historical one with the girl from Oh My Venus. We started that, but we never finished it. But with Lee Jun-gi, one of the, scenes I want to highlight is when... he is for... No, we didn't see the season he was in that. Sorry. It was... what was the one that... oh, Arong and the Magistrate was the only one that we'd seen him in a little bit, which, you know, other than that, we basically haven't seen him in a full-length drama. But the scene where Lee Jun-gi, or the fourth prince, has to... ends up killing the tenth prince because he asked him to... is afterwards he is basically screaming and crying and laughing, and his just emotion then, his just, that is like just like broke out of him and couldn't control it. And then later on, I believe it's him and Heisu, and he's just, you know, like crying about it. And it is, that impact of that scene was so good with his emotion. Extremely memorable. And one thing I do want to touch on, we sometimes joke about it, to be honest. What are you looking at?
I'm trying to find.
Find what? What?
Apparently, Lee Jun-gi was in Earthdoll Chronicles.
He's in the second season. Yes. He's
like one of the main
characters, I believe.
Okay.
And then he had a cameo in Hotel de Lune. Was he the one? Yeah, he had a cameo in that one.
Yeah.
And I think he had a minor cameo in a different one. But Scarlet Heart's the only one we've seen like a full length.
Full length.
Mm-hmm. And I have no idea what I was talking about. No idea. Completely lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
That's okay. That's what I was saying. We sometimes kind of joke about it.
Oh.
How literally every couple in this show, either one dies or they both die. You know, sounds extremely like, why would a show do that or something
or
like that.
Or sounds depressing.
Or sounds depressing. And it's not even just relationships. There's some people, even just other people who die as well.
Yeah.
But I think it just shows the impact of a death to characters.
Yes.
Extremely well.
Right.
With the fourth and Jesus. And, like, you know, that's a big reason I think she finally decided to leave the palace was after watching her best friend die. Mm-hmm. She basically thinks, everyone around me that I'm connected to ends up dying. I don't want any part to do with this anymore. Right. I don't want to do this anymore. And that is a, you know. And also with the fourth, he watches his mother die and still to her last breath hate him.
Yeah.
And then also he, you know, his own brother, the tenth, asks him to kill him in the end mm-hmm. so he could go with his wife.
Yeah.
And him watching that, and I think especially with fourth, it's sometimes not being able to protect mm-hmm. some of those yeah. people, you know. And, you know, like with the Crown Prince really was a good person.
Exactly.
And then was getting poisoned and going insane.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, he wanted to support him, but, you know, this is just crazy.
Right.
And, you know, there are so many instances that they do, like, show the impact of a character dying. They didn't just die, and that's right. the end of it.
And both good people and bad
yes.
people mm-hmm. both die.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they're both impacted. Like,
right.
when the third prince becomes king, he's haunted
exactly.
from killing his own
yeah.
brother,
mm-hmm.
you know, and stuff like that. They're all affected
right.
greatly. So one of the things that I think a lot of people, when they talk about Scarlet Heart, they talk about is a second season. So, we didn't know this, but until just recently, the Chinese one, the second season is set in modern day.
Right.
And
right.
does have some of the same characters. Which I think because as far as I remember, it was released before this Korean version.
Mm-hmm.
I can see why a lot
yeah.
of people are hoping
right.
for the second season. Now, would you want to state what our opinion on that is? On having a second season of Scarlet
What
Heart.
Would they even do?
Yep.
What would the storyline be? What would the drama be?
Mm-hmm.
And it would pale in comparison.
Yeah.
Because you can't have the kind of drama
mm-hmm.
that was present in the historical period.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to kill off
that many
20 people modern day and get away with it.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what.
Right. And that's one thing where I could see where you could, let's say in theory,
mm-hmm.
take this story and not make it where she travels back in time historically, but say she just wakes up in someone else's body and she gets involved with the power struggle with a Chaebol family. I could see you taking similar storylines in that way. No one's going to die and stuff like that. But, you know, something like that. But that's taking the original story, the first part, you know.
Yeah, but I can see what people would want to see would be him
coming
to the future. All right,
that would be a modern day setting of
remake
of the the first season
original. Mm-hmm.
Now, if you took this and did a second season and be set in modern day,
mm-hmm.
she at this point remembers him,
right?
In so if let's say in theory he comes back, but he's like a reincarnation or
mm-hmm.
has the same body, face, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah,
he wouldn't remember her.
Right.
Unless he did the same thing and traveled actually forward in time for him. And it just, I don't see where you'd go with it. Say, in some ways, fine. They both remember each other, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they get reunited. Then what happens?
I can see more of he would be either coming forward or he'd be a reincarnation, so mm-hmm. he doesn't know her whatsoever, but she right. runs into him and meets him and now has to
deal with that.
Well, she wants to have a relationship sure. with him, so she...
Right, and that...
And will he or won't he ever remember his past sure. life?
I could see that at, like, the first bit of a drama. And
but
honestly,
I can't see it being, like, a 24-episode drama.
Yeah, and honestly, I think there are some dramas that have done kind of a similar...
It could be a short one. A super
maybe,
short one.
Maybe, but I would say, generally... We both kind of agree we don't really want a second season. Yeah. Now, do I want a bunch of these actors and actresses to do another show together? Absolutely. Sure, that'd yeah. be great. For example, the actress that plays pretty much the only princess that's highlighted in this show, and though there's probably way more in actual yeah. history, is the actress from My Roommate is a Gumiho. She played one of the other characters, not one of the leads, but... Do you know who I'm talking about? She played the other Gumiho.
Yes. Which was an amazing
yes.
role.
And that was something that, you know, was really, like, crazy because we'd seen, we'd watched Scarlet Heart years ago, and then mm-hmm. we saw Gumiho, and then we rewatched Scarlet Heart, and we, like, freaked out. We're like, is that her?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And one thing I think she, you know, the acting isn't necessarily because you liked the character. We've mentioned this before. Mm-hmm. The third, amazing acting because I hated him.
Yes.
Through absolutely. And through. Same with the 4/3 and 14th's mother. Hated her.
Oh, my word.
Through and through. Yeah. And that
which
be...
shows that she can yes. portray her character mm-hmm. accurately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, like the princess I'd mentioned, I didn't necessarily, I did kind of hate her in the end, but, you know, she was a little more like, you saw her flow of, you know, how she turned and stuff like that. I think they did very well, but I just don't see, this was also a 20-episode show. So, was it 20? Yes, 20-episode. So, it's quite long. Mm-hmm. Longer than a 16, you know, your standard 16-episode.
Right.
I just couldn't see a full 16-episode show with these characters set in the present really working
right
for that long yeah. and not just throwing in random misunderstandings, random drama, and stuff like that. That yeah. would just get convoluted and old.
It would.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. But one of the last things I want to mention about this show is the OST.
The best...
So, I'm not saying best.
Saying the best.
You're saying the best?
Okay. Compared to Goblin.
I think Goblin's a
little
bit better.
Which is one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
They're both in the
yes.
top
yes.
five.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, this OST, one, is really big.
It is very big.
Which most OSTs are big in their like background or instrumental music. This one is also very big in its... songs that have lyrics and that
right.
I sang.
In both
and, yeah.
aspects. Mm-hmm.
And one thing I actually do want to note, because obviously if you're going to be re-listening to a soundtrack, maybe if you're listening like epic movie soundtracks, mm-hmm. those will be the instrumental ones. But if you're listening to stuff like K-drama soundtracks, it's more likely the ones that have like lyrics and
right.
stuff. But this drama had a really good instrumental
yes,
soundtrack.
It did. Mm-hmm.
They had these really good, like this one in particular, was it like this, was it the violin that they used in it? Was this like dramatic moment? They'd have this like one particular song they'd use that it really stuck out to me of mm-hmm. how well it set the scene. And I think they had a few songs that might have used traditional instruments as
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
And one thing was you know, if you want more traditional music, this definitely doesn't have it because they use a lot of pop music
yeah.
in this one.
If you want traditional music, go watch a Chinese historical
traditional inspired
fantasy.
Or like
yeah.
the sound of it and stuff mm-hmm. like that. I don't know. I can't say that because we haven't watched enough Chinese historical at all. The ones we watch.
The high fantasy ones tended to
lean
sure.
in that way. But... it just, its soundtrack was really fun. Sometimes mm-hmm. really fun. Oh, yeah, I'm going to need to pull up what that song is. The
death song.
Wait, I need to find it. Give me a second. Because if I remember correctly, didn't I do my solo song for ballet to that song, to an instrumental version?
I believe you did.
I believe yes. I did.
Your Cicchetti solo.
Mm-hmm. Which I never did in the end, but I did start choreographing it. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I have to find it. But also the costuming, if you want to talk about that a little bit while I try and find this. Oh,
well, see, we always analyze the costuming. Hmm. We're much more familiar with Joseon-era costuming.
Mm-hmm.
So every so often we'd be like, well, is this accurate? Is this accurate?
Which we don't, still don't 100% know. 100%
know. But, mm-hmm. but we have a book by...
Do you want me to get the book?
Woo Na Young.
Two different books, actually.
Two of them. Mm-hmm. Who's a Korean artist mm-hmm. who illustrates traditional Korean dress.
Mm-hmm.
As well as she does, like, Korean versions of Disney characters yeah. and Marvel characters.
The books specifically are historical.
Mm-hmm. And from what I've seen in those books...
Mm-hmm. And other stuff online.
The Three Kingdom era.
This is Goryeo.
I'm sorry, the Goryeo era.
Yeah, they're right next to each other.
Yeah. Fashion, mm-hmm. if you call it,
mm-hmm.
it was pretty accurate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe the males.
Oh, their bangs. Absolutely not. No.
That is usually the.
Yeah. You know what?
That is honestly usually the older. Historical dramas have that problem.
I guess. I think this...
Though that one, like, with Park Seo-joon and his hair and...
Yeah, they did it in Hwarang. Yeah. But Hwarang, they already were taking interpretation for the Hwarang characters anyway.
Right.
Yeah. With this one, I would say that is one of the big things they did to appeal to a modern-day yes. audience.
Yes.
Was their hairstyles.
Yeah.
I can't blame them for that. You know what? Props to the freaking... What do you call it? The hair and makeup department for having each prince has to have a top knot in some way, but they each have to have a separate looking hairstyle.
Yeah, they all got to look different.
Different.
Uh-huh. Now, I love the fact that each of them is it's kind of like us and how every kid in our house, our whole house, everybody yeah. is color-coded.
Yeah.
So our calendar is color-coded. Our toothbrushes are color-coded.
Stuff like that.
Because there's so many people, you got to separate them mm-hmm. somehow. But so the princes... Generally,
we're color-coded.
Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. fourth prince was black. Third prince was orange.
Or red, usually.
Eighth prince was blue.
Mm-hmm. The ninth was purple, usually.
The 13th was usually in pastels.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the 14th also had a version of blue. Yeah.
That's helpful for the... viewer to identify
yes.
who mm-hmm. this prince is.
And I would say in some ways that they did, like, visually with the eighth prince is towards the beginning of... It's whatever clothes they wear when they go into court.
Mm-hmm.
They're, like, the ones that have the big... The circle on the front.
Oh, the circle.
Uh-huh. And they also have a belt doohickey, which...
Right.
Did they have... I think they had this in the...
Yeah.
Yeah, they had it in that.
Yeah.
They would... Those would be especially the times they would kind of have their own colors. That
right.
I believe towards the beginning, if I remember correctly, the eighth prince had a type of blue. I don't remember what shade.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, when the third prince was the king, he had black. So I think they were kind of trying to visually mm-hmm. show the change in his yeah, character.
I think some of his clothing also,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
it got darker in tone
yes.
as it went mm-hmm, along.
Mm-hmm. I think they did a good job of the costuming to appeal somewhat to a modern day eye, I guess you could mm-hmm. say. But I think a lot of the stuff they had in the show was pretty historically accurate. And it was beautiful.
It was beautiful.
Freaking gorgeous.
Yeah.
And they had a lot of different costumes. They had so many characters
mm-hmm.
they had to do, including all of the princes, plus the Queens and, you know, Jesus, right, and, you know, and stuff like that. But yeah, it was super interesting. Like, for example, all the court ladies / servants that work in the palace.
In the polka dot
thing. Mm-hmm. Those, I have absolutely no idea how accurate that is. Right. But it could be. I don't know. But yeah, like, so overall, I think you could very safely assume we liked this show. very much liked this show. And not to say that, you know, that we talked praises about the whole time. Not to say that there weren't points that we didn't love what they did with the plot, or it was a little like, oh, of course they did that. Or a little bit here and there, of course.
Well, if you're going to have any kind of quote-unquote romance,
there's always a little bit.
There's going to be some more predictable
things. Yeah, like the whole relationship between Jesus and Forth was extremely complicated.
Right.
And, like, you know, with her leaving and him pushing her, like, you know, that sometimes, like, oh my gosh, why are you doing this? But yeah. I don't think it took away from the drama overall. I don't think. I don't remember what she wore.
It was similar in style, but different in color.
Oh, well, that makes sense. Yeah. You have different colors, yeah. But yeah, so I won't say it's a perfect show.
Right.
Because it's not. I really don't think it is. I think there are, though, overall, just so much that we enjoyed about it and were interested in these storylines and how they intertwined and stuff like that. It was just genuinely interesting to watch.
Oh.
Even if at sometimes it was quite sad.
Right,
stuff like that. It was still very interesting to see all these characters develop. How they did. So, yeah, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. And we finally rewatched the show. We've literally been wanting to rewatch it since.
And unfortunately,
we saw it.
It's not. It's you can't just go to on to Vicky
hard
and
to
watch
find.
It.
Yeah. And I do believe there are some sites that say there's an episode 21. And there is not. That's kind of like, I believe, a combo of like deleted scenes or behind the scenes and stuff like that. So I think it's like, I don't know if it's official or not. It might have been released as a special. I'm not sure. But yeah. So we really hope you guys enjoy this episode. And we'll see you all next time.